Okay, so we're being recorded. So the first thing I'd like to do is to just kind of, you know, it's been about 10 days or so since we talked the last time. I'm just wondering if questions or comments or thoughts or musings have occurred to you as you kind of thought about what we've talked about or, you know, had a little time. So I'm kind of curious if there's anything that you're thinking or wondering about or would like to say about what we're doing, what we did the last time.
Yeah. I'm just looking over my notes of what I jotted down last time to ground myself in where I was. Yeah, I'm in such a different place than I was even 10 days ago. That issues about how Lilith factors into the bigger picture with other planets. How is it different from Pluto, Venus? I have Venus and Neptune conjunct in my chart. And Neptune's in Scorpio, it's ruled by Pluto, Pluto, Uranus. I mean, I've had a lot of insights about that configuration. And it's a little hard for me to separate out where the Lilith energy differs from that. And, like, Lilith, I guess what I took in from last time is that it really has to do more with instinct and where we're coming from on a gut level or like on a more raw, natural, like animal level almost.
Yeah. It's not to say that those other archetypes aren't animalistic, because certainly... Mm-hmm. You know, certain things about Pluto, if you really, you know, you look at them with open eyes, you're kind of surprised how uncivilized it is. But, so the place to begin is to think about the distinction between these planets, which are, just as a group, before we get more specific, you know, this body, this chunk of rock and or gas that's orbiting the sun just as the Earth is, right? So that's like the first category of things. And you can even include asteroids in there if one wanted to, you know, add that to the question. There's a body, there's a thing.
Yeah.
But Lilith is this point that is this ever-changing function of the relationship between the moon and the Earth.
Yeah.
So there's like a subtle layer to add in, because it's not a body. It's, you know, a just kind of a mathematical point that is a depiction of the relationship at any given moment of the moon's orbit around the Earth.
Mm.
That's the first place to begin. So you have like the light of the sun, you know, beaming out, you know, 24/7 and being reflected to us from these planets. And then Lilith itself is this point. I'm kind of being really pedantic right now, but you'll get it, because there's such a subtle thing under the surface here that don't think I'm trying to talk to you like you're stupid, but I'm trying to spell it out really, really laboriously. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So don't be like, I'm not 5 years old. So,
Okay, so
you have the distinction between the light being shined by an actual body that one can look at through a telescope versus the interplay of moon and Earth. So even, you know, the interplay, the dynamic interaction between these two bodies that exert gravitational pull on each other, and in fact, it's about equal. I was actually listening today. I didn't realize till just now why I was so fascinated to hear this, but it was this Radiolab podcast, which is like my favorite thing, and they're very philosophical and scientific, and they're curious journalists. And they're talking to some kind of archaeologist about, or paleontologist about, coral and the lives that are depicted in the rings of coral when one cuts into coral, and how every year they have this growth spurt, but they're like 360-ish, you know, lines until this growth spurt every year. But if you go back millions of years or billions of years ago and you find coral or the early coral, it's like 400 or 410 number lines, which means that the number of days per year was different, and it has everything to do with the moon exerting an influence on the Earth and actually slowing its orbit, slowing its spinning down. So it orbits the sun the same number of times, but spinning on its axis has changed because of the influence of the moon.
Yeah, I kind of knew that. Like they have come. Well, kind of. I mean,
yeah.
I knew that they have come into sync, where they
That's
do
right.
this gravitational, like how the moon always shows its same face to us, and there are certain things that are in sync about how the moon orbits.
Exactly.
But that
exactly.
That is really cool about the coral. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see, and so they exhibit that thing. And so now it's like 360, 365-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And from this, you know, many, many, many eons ago, it was about 400 to 410 was the magic number. So they're in this relationship. And how I look at this, so that's just the physical thing, where it is a point that is a function of the relationship between the Earth and the Moon, which are always acting off each other or responding to each other, always in this like their synchronous thing, but they have different. One is much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
One orbits the other one. You know, it's like they're not equal, but there's this relationship. And so I look at this as the relationship, the ongoing changing relationship between the physical body and the emotional or energetic field.
Mm-hmm.
So now that we're down in this like layer, I can stop being pedantic, but I just wanted to like unfold that, because when we think we're looking at a birth chart, we're like, oh, there's Venus, there's Neptune, oh, there's Ceres, there's Pluto, there's Sun. You know, we look at these bodies, and then there's this point that's Lilith, and we're like, well, let's talk about it the same way, but we kind of can't, because it's not physically even close to those to those other things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the physical place to start. You know, with the archetypes or energetically, how the emotions or energy field, how consciousness is actually interacting with the physical body, and this is instinct. You know, this takes us into that word instinct, that whole terrain. So you know with certainty that blah, blah, blah is good for you. And you know with certainty that this other thing is not good for you.
Mm-hmm.
I would, you know, if I'm talking to you as a client or a student, I'm skipping everything that I just told you and go straight to, well, instinct.
Right.
You know, that. So it's like skipping all that. So the interplay of emotions and energy. And energy also meaning, you know, sensitivity to energy around you as you feel it in the body.
Yeah.
Which is this thing about Lilith, where something may sound great, but as soon as you're standing next to it, you're like, I can't stand this, I have to get away from it. And that's like it's not your conscious mind observing something about it or making a value judgment or prioritizing. It's just like your energy field and your body saying, I have to get away from this.
Mm-hmm. You know,
like
what?
When you've met somebody with oil and water, and you can't explain it. The person seems great, but you're like, I cannot deal. And it's like the person's great,
yeah.
But you can't deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So go ahead.
Yeah. What comes to my mind is how I've been fascinated. It seems like a Pluto and Virgo generation kind of thing, where we have like. Every new diet, every new nutritional thing, like this is what you should do. This is, it's about food combination. No, it's about how yin and yang your food is. No, it's about how acidic it is. No, you know, it's like, and what you're saying, it makes sense. It's like, well, somebody had the experience of, hey, this food is really right for me. It's really going to help me. And lo and behold, it did. And then there had to be a whole theory and a system that came out of that. And like, well, it worked for me, so it'll work for you too. And then we're left with like this whole morass of dietary options and like a endless mine of places to feel guilty for how we eat.
That's right.
And when we come back to the instinct, you know, well, yeah, is this good for me, or is this what I need, or is it not? And I don't have to worry about all the other stuff.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, the other stuff can, I mean, you know, people's brains are amazing, and people, as you mentioned, Pluto and Virgo, you know, one of your superheroine strengths is analysis, discernment, categorization, ranking, valuing things. You know,
mm-hmm.
like that's something that over the course of many lives, if we look at it through an evolutionary lens, you become really good at. So it's like a skill you have. But it also can be, for anybody with a strong Virgo signature, including that, you know, it can be an Achilles heel. It can be the downfall of success because of that so much emphasis. But we should understand how these things work and affect us. And yet Lilith is the poster goddess for one size can never fit all.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's not possible.
Yeah.
It's not possible. And, I mean, as you were talking, I'm reminded of, I was looking a number of years, maybe almost a decade ago, to make some changes with how I eat. You may have heard me talk about this in certain ways in different places, but I ended up meeting this woman, and I ended up dating her, and she ate raw primal, which was like raw meat, raw dairy, and then vegetables and fruits, and then like nuts and seeds, but like everything was raw.
Hmm.
And certain things were prepared in specific ways, like you could soak chicken in lemon or lime juice, and that would cook it without heat. It would it would chemically alter it and kill bacteria, but it would not destroy it, or not alter the protein, would not denature the protein. So anyway, but there was like a lot of raw meat eating. There was like raw organ eating, you know, and also like raw cheese and raw milk, raw dairy, raw yogurt, raw kefir, all this kind of stuff, and colostrum, like all these things that like people don't eat, right?
Mm.
And I met her, and I was like, I was really shocked because she glowed. And it was almost creepy, but I knew it was right. I knew it was good. So I found out that this is how she'd been eating for a few years. And then I met her sister and brother, each of whom had been doing this and had the same energy. And then I met a bunch of people they knew. And everybody was just vibrating in these amazing ways. And basically I got this introduction to Lilith in this way.
Huh.
Because I went over to their house when I was dating her, and her brother made like cut up steak, raw steak, and made like a couple little sauces,
yeah,
you know, like namashoyu and something else and whatever. He made like these sauces, and he said, "Look, when your body tastes this, something's gonna wake up, and part of you might be unhappy, but the rest of you is gonna be thrilled, and you're not gonna be able to wait till you have it again." So, and I was like, "I don't want to eat raw meat," and so anyway, I ate it, and he was right. Something woke up. And it was primal. It was Lilith. Mm. It was like root chakra. And this instinctive side of me woke up, not like 100% in that moment, but I'd say like 10 to 12% in that moment, like enough for me to be like, oh my God, what just happened? And then I kept eating it off and on over the years, and I'm still doing it off and on. It might, you know, sometimes it's a couple months between when I do it. But anyway, it is instinctive because my body responds very well to it, but what I wanted to tell you was in the first few months when I was doing this on my own, not just with somebody else, I would go to the store and I would get really high quality meat intending to eat it raw, and my brain would say, no, you can't do this, you know, and then I'd get home and I would actually take this ground bison and I would make it into this salad where you couldn't taste it. Like, I put it in with avocado and, like, cinnamon and sesame seeds and sometimes some raw cacao powder, like raw chocolate powder, and just, like, mix it up, like onions, tomato, so I couldn't taste it.
Mm.
Because because my brain and therefore my tongue had problems with it. But I would eat it and I'd be calm. And for years, I've managed like certain energetic issues in my field by eating raw meat and raw dairy, because raw fat absorbs excess hormones. I think with like some of my chart signatures, there's like an adrenal issue, like overwork adrenal, not fatigue, but just like always being on edge, that kind of thing. And I managed that through eating raw fat like that. But anyway, my brain was always opposed to it, and then my body was always happy when I did it. And so I was in that position, and that's Lilith. That was my Lilith, like getting this, you know, drawn to this thing. But, oh, my God, you can't do that. Don't do that. Don't you dare put that in my mouth, you know? And I'm like, there I am, and I'm doing it week after week.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I have a long story, but that, you know, my brain said this is what we're supposed to eat, and it was not that, you know. I do sometimes get squeamish. Sometimes I put it on my mouth, and part of me freaks out, and I can't deal with it, so I will sear something, or I will cook it or something. But a lot of the time I'm okay with it. And so that's a Lilith thing. So, you know, most of us, however, you know, regarding diet and food, since you brought it up and we're still talking about it, but most of us eat what we think we should eat, and then we don't make connections between how we feel while we're eating, unless it's really, really bad. And also after we're eating. So, for example, if I eat something that has a lot of carbs or something in it, I will get sleepy and tired afterward. But most of us don't think that's bad. I mean, we just accept that's how we feel. We don't say, oh, well, if I didn't eat this, then I wouldn't feel that way. And so getting Lilith woken up is really important, because if we eat based on what our brains think we should eat and tell them what our minds are doing, we're going to be unhealthy and unhappy. And if we eat the way our body asks, then we're going to be more alive, instinctive. We're going to be happier. We're going to smile and laugh a lot more, because the energy flow in our field will change. Yeah, so that's like food being one of the huge areas of discussion for Lilith. Like, well, and as you said, you know, looking at it from the perspective of diet, because, you know, most of us have in our mind the connotation of that as some kind of restrictive thing, or at least regimented and planned thing. So the very notion of not necessarily always being on a diet, that's not what I mean all the time, but that notion of these guidelines. Well, if you eat instinctively, your body will never say, please eat this bag of Doritos. like your body will never, I mean, literally your body will never say, oh, that hot dog was great, let's have another. That's your mouth.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, so it says, you know, instinctively, if we let some of the dust settle, and this is why periodic fasting is good, even for like 16, 20 hours at a time. Just like intermittent fasting, this is one of the things that it can help, is waking up Lilith, where you eat, like the last meal you eat is like 3 p.m. on one day, and you don't eat again until like 7 a.m. the next day, or noon, and you've given your body this rest. And then it affects other things, like insulin sensitivity, and just your whole body has a chance to rest and reset a little teeny bit, just interrupting that normal flow of constant digestion. But if this is the image, the reason I said that was because the image was, when the dust settles from that constant feeding process and your body has a chance to breathe and relax and pay attention to what's happening, it will tell you what it wants. So if a person got in the habit of fasting one day a week, like water fasting one day a week, or 20 hours a week, you know, whatever, but whatever it is, it's something consistent like that. The first couple of times, when you go back to food, your brain, your mind, your tongue will really try to assertively go after the things that you miss, that you're attached to, that might not be instinctive choices. And so you have to do it 4 or 5 weeks, and then wait. Like the next morning, it's time, like now, you know, the schedule says, hey, it's time to eat again. Smell something and see if your body wants it.
Mm.
And this, so this is a strategy of allowing instinct to come in, but we actually have to calm down the noise, which is the, you know, the energetic impact of constant feeding,
mm-hmm.
constant digestion, constant elimination. If we can break up that pattern, we can wake up instinct somewhat. And so then you're not going from, oh, well, I thought it was all about acid-alkaline balance, or, oh, I thought it was about food combination. Like that thing you were mentioning, it's you get out of that, and you also get out of, oh, well, I never eat carbs, or, oh, I never eat fruit, or whatever it is, like the nevers or the always. You get away from that because then your body says, you know what, today, please eat a potato. And you're like, wait, I wasn't eating potatoes. And you
right.
do it.
Right.
And then maybe you have that little like carb thing, and your body goes, okay. And the next day it'll be like, okay, now it's back to this broccoli and whatever it is. And like, but anyway, the instinctive thing without letting the brain, and therefore like the brain is also, here's the other thing, which a lot of people do experience, and Lilith is the remedy, or at least the main, an incredibly potent remedy, is that brain trying to compensate for what's happening with the emotions that we don't know how to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can detach food from emotions, then Lilith's instinctive body wisdom can operate. If we can, again, the noise to calm down from the, like, persistent feeding, you know, for whatever reason we do. So this is a very rich topic. I mean, you know, whether you come at it from, like I mentioned last week, like healthcare, food, or sexuality and sexual activity, like those three main, you know, this kind of main ways that we experience our bodies, you know, in regular living, like this, just, or maybe not the three main, but like just three main ones, then, you know, the, each one offers this like really rich, this really rich exploratory ground, because it's, our brains have come in to be very, very strong, and essentially we've allowed our brains to appoint themselves dictators for life.
Yeah.
And, Okay, so you were asking about other archetypes. So that's the whole kind of background thing on why it's different and then how that plays in. You know, I'd say Lilith is about relationships, but it's about binding a certain way through relationships, where Venus would be about our relating style, the people we draw into us. Lilith would be what once we're in a relationship or when we're evaluating a relationship, are we doing that while we create autonomy? And are we drawing people to us who can interact with us instinctively and who can respect us instinctively? So it is about relationship, but it's not the broad field of Venus, which is like everything. It's this specific thing of, I have to know who I am. Am I giving room for that? And am I interacting with others who also give me room? And can I give them room?
Hmm.
So it's like a frequency of a relationship.
Hmm.
Yeah. But again, it's not like any other planets because it's this point. Hmm. You know, like as it functions. Yeah. Some people do equate it to Scorpio energy in general and Pluto.
Yeah.
And, you probably find that if you look anything up about it, and it seems kind of obvious, and yet there's something, it can be kind of slippery, a slippery slope to do that, because most people who are doing that seem to come at the Scorpio energy as that place where Plutonian stuff, where that dark stuff resides, that they don't say it this way, but perhaps we should be afraid of.
Yeah.
Like the mystery that perhaps if we kept talking about it, somebody might use the word evil at some point. That's
right,
that's like a tenor
right.
with Pluto.
Right.
And Lilith is said to be the mother of all demons in the old-timey Hebrew tradition. So in one sense, it's true, it's right on. In another sense, they just kind of offer a little caution for how that, you know, how that's discussed and conceived of. But there is an intense...
Well, yeah.
Truth that resonates. Yeah.
It seems like, I mean, how I think about and explain Scorpio energy to people is like, it's what's underground. You can't see it. It's this, mm-hmm. like, fertility. It's like the creative spark, the creative energy that underlies everything. And it's only scary because we don't understand it. We can't understand it. It's not understandable. And what I'm hearing about Lilith has a little bit different, like, it's a little more specifically about the interaction between emotions and the emotional body and what the self needs to be a self.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a robot, not an automaton, not a series of scripts or data sets, but yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
To be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, with Pluto, you know, certain things will happen where that thing that you don't know comes up, and, you know, if you're really looking at it, and if you have some kind of psychological, astrological vocabulary, you know, psychological and or astrological, you might get in and see that, oh, this thing is actually really important. It's big, but yeah, I didn't see it. Oh my God, here's this thing in front of my face. You know, I have to learn to deal with it. There is that element to Lilith as well, but if you're doing Pluto well, you're managing fear and power. You know, like your relationship with what you can't see, and are you afraid of that, or are you willing to figure out how to accept it and harness that energy? And with Lilith, it's more, honestly, it's more like a day-to-day thing, and can I operate, can I make choices based in instinct, you know, that may actually require a person to face fears and deal with power and issues about fear and power. But it's a different layer. Like if you thought about several transparencies, you know, for like an overhead projector on top of each other, think about like a different layer of it where the Pluto thing tends to be big things and the Lilith thing could be big, but if you're doing Lilith right, it's not big things. It's a long drawn out series of minor choices that keep you in alignment with your body and your emotions and your energy.
Hmm.
I mean, I argue that one should be in alignment with the Pluto deal, and that we sometimes go through these really difficult processes of finding out what the unseen thing is. You know, like when something that seems or feels disastrous is manifesting in front of our faces, you know, the kind of Pluto thing. But again, I think the Pluto thing tends to be like, and now I'm getting the image of like unearthing these boulders. You know, there's like giant things under the surface and they have to come up, versus the Lilith thing is like getting used to playing in the dirt. It's like a matter of scale, perhaps.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, Pluto is like the edge of the solar system, and Lilith is right here. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So the thing that seems far away versus the like actually being right here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've also been asked about similarities between Lilith and Uranus, because mm-hmm. there's this element of Lilith of breaking away.
Yeah.
You know, especially in the myth when she doesn't want to be controlled by Adam, she breaks away. And she goes off to be independent. And some people will kind of hear some Uranus threads in there and kind of think, you know, that there's similarity. And there kind of is, but actually there is more similarity than I was going to say, because with Uranus, you might find out that you don't fit somewhere and you have to leave. But ideally, you go and develop your individuality. We might, you know, specifically with that, we might call it individuation. It's like the, you know, psychological term for what we need to do with Uranus, developing that own sense of self and our, you know, our ability to be an individual. And then ultimately we should come back to, you know, the way I talk about it is often maybe you broke away from a group, you think groups are problems, go develop your own thing, come back and find the right group to share it with, you know, kind of like upgrading your choices on groups. With Lilith, it could be groups or it could be individuals, but there is a similar process with that. But essentially, I need to pick the right people. Again, like I mentioned earlier, you know, can I be instinctive? can I, you know, in this dynamic with this person or with this group, can I be free flowing? Can I be, you know, stream of consciousness with my emotions and how I feel and instinct, you know, and kind of can I do that? But there is this element of needing to break away, and some people, just like when they've broken away with Uranus stuff, they think other people are the problem, but in fact it's that the choice of people to play with is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And with both of those archetypes, you can have, the thing that you're born into very young could be the thing you have to get away from, and you may actually get this idea in your head that you don't fit anywhere. Because, you know, the place where you're born, which is, you know, all, which is like the world, you know, it seems like everything, can have that. And that can be in common with Uranus and with Lilith, because you have to be unique and autonomous. You have to honor who you are. But Lilith is not about being out of relationship, which is what the myth as we've received it may seem to indicate, that, you know, if she's angry and vengeful and she's, you know, seeking revenge on men and, or, you know, on God through men or whatever, and also on babies and all this just terrible stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it may seem, you know, if we let it sit there, we take the myth as we receive it, then Lilith is going to be lonely. But in fact, she is very conscious, I believe, of the fact that she is half of a being. Like, you know, male and female, and then God created, you know, Adam, male and female, and then the split of masculine and feminine, because Adam said, hey, I'm lonely, if you remember that part of the story.
Yeah.
So she's very conscious that she needs to have another half, that she cannot complete within herself, but she can function on her own, and she develops that trust in herself and that confidence that when she needs to be independent, she will. She doesn't need to settle for some guy who, you know, is being spoon-fed everything by, you know, somebody else in charge and wants her to just be submissive. Like, she doesn't do that. But I really do believe that Lilith wants to connect with other people.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's like the, she gets to be seeking her other half, but choosing on her own terms. Choosing based on, and if you're looking at instinct, you know, it becomes what serves the highest good, what is really her highest match to discover, and
that's
it
right.
Seems like she should have a right to try out different partners in the process of learning what that is. That's part of her path. Yeah.
That's really important, yeah, because if you do something based on how people, like if you pick a partner based on how they seem or that idea, I always come back to this phrase, that image of how somebody looks on paper versus what it feels like to be around him or her. And if you do the on paper thing, or if you trust, like, oh, well, my parents know his parents, and they're a good family, and he's nice and good and kind and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And he's got a bright future. Well, okay, I'll meet him. So if we do that, and, millennia of young marriage that's arranged is one of the things that is meant to defeat Lilith, like to weed Lilith out of us. But culture shapers didn't know, like patriarchal people didn't know, that you couldn't really get rid of it. They thought they could train it out. And if you look at, like my mom was telling me about her cat, and her cat will pick up a piece of something and carry it around. Like, after she pounces on it, you know, she'll pick it up and carry it around. Normal cat behavior. Well, that is, you know, it's a piece of yarn, right? Or it's a piece of cloth. And the parallel in the animal kingdom is the leg of that antelope.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, like, this is mine, and I'm going to carry it over here and eat it.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have these examples of, like, domesticated animals where some of that instinctive behavior is there, but basically most of it's gone. You know, your cat's out looking out the window and makes that little noise, and the jaw goes, and it's, like, simulating, like, biting down on the neck. Like, there, that instinct is in there. But, like, mm-hmm. a cat is not going to be destroyed if you never let it kill a bird.
Yeah, right.
Like, the cat's not going to sit around and, like, you know, take too many pills or something because it's sad because, you know,
yeah.
it's, okay. Okay, so, but with people, you can't get rid of that because we're always animals. So you can train us, you know, but you can't really get rid of it, which is, like, you know, the ultimate downfall of the patriarchy is that we're not computers, we're not robots, you know, we're not automatons. But so anyway, variety of partners. If I marry who my parents want me to marry, and if I have kids with that person, and maybe I love her, maybe I love our kids, maybe I'm happy with all of that. But at some point, something in my field, my consciousness, which will be reflected in my biochemistry, like one day, my wife will not smell good to me. She will not, you know, kissing her will be repulsive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, so this thing about the variety of partners that you bring up is really critical because you have to find out what activates you in different ways. Like, and it's not just sexually or biochemically and hormonally. It's also intellectual and fun, humor, and, you know, laughing. It's all those things that activate different sides of us. And, yeah, and if we don't find that out, then we're probably, you know, we might not know who we are because we don't know ourselves in terms of the how different people activate us.
Yeah.
So it's
yeah,
so yeah, that variety of partners is a huge deal.
The modern marriage, I think, you know, we have this, like, rebellion against, I don't want to marry for some other reason other than that because I love the person. Well, now we've got this ideal where I'm going to marry for love, I'm going to marry the person I want to be with, and then we place all of our expectations on that person. Well, I fell in love with you,
right.
You know, you were the one, and now everything is shit, and we've been married for 10 years, and I can't stand you, and I have no choice.
Yeah.
Like, I either have to go through
right.
an expensive, messy divorce and shame and guilt and what am I going to do with the children, and or stay in a place where my needs aren't really getting met. So
that's right. So there you go. Am I, you know, do I stay and I feel punished or controlled
yeah.
or submissive or dominated or controlled? And that's like Lilith's quandary before she leaves Adam.
Yeah.
Or do I go off on my own and create this whole potential mess of complication?
Yeah, yeah.
But find out who I am and live on my own terms.
Yeah.
And that's the Lilith quandary. I mean, that's it. And, I mean, I've always identified, I mean, since this, you know, archetype came into my vocabulary, I've always felt very Lilith. I've always felt like I'm a Lilith person, but, and it's prominent in my chart. It's with my Moon, Mercury, Neptune. It's all, you know, it's in there. So it's with my Moon, you know, my Mercury. And when some people that I know, and like you just brought up the idea of like shame and guilt with like divorce, I don't attach shame and guilt to divorce. Like, I'm not married. I probably won't get married. You know, I'm in a committed partnership, but, like just whatever. But
yeah.
So it's not part of my experience thus far, and it may never be. But when I talk to people and they say something like, well, you know, I mean, the shame that goes with, and I'm like, and I don't understand that. I really, I don't understand that. And then they say, well, you know, these other people kind of put a guilt trip on you because you're not doing it right or you failed. And I'm like, I also don't understand that because I feel very Lilith. Because I get that people think that way and they can throw their crap on you. But I guess I don't happen to find divorce to be a failure. I'm like, well, it sounds like it didn't work. I'm assuming you tried and you couldn't make it, you couldn't fix it. So, okay, now what? Like, for me, it's almost like this practical thing. But, again, I haven't experienced it. But, you know, I do work with a lot of people. And I have been with other people who have had divorces, like in partnership. And, you know, and it's just something that I don't automatically attach shame to. Because I'm
well,
patriarchal crap didn't work for you? Okay, move on.
Yeah. Well,
anyway,
yeah,
what were you going to say?
I see it from the perspective of my kids' friends. So, you know, 13-year-olds and, you know, watching them grow up. I've known kids since they were babies who have been in households where there were divorces, remarriages, re-divorces, and just watching those kids and how they, I mean, it's really hard on the kids.
Uh-huh.
They don't have a feeling of stability. But I think they're also really confused about marriage, you know? It's
yeah.
like, well, you know, and one girl, like last weekend, one of my daughter's friends was saying, you know, oh, I just found out my dad's getting married. And, you know, it's like he didn't even think it was important enough to tell her in any kind of, you know, way other than sort of offhand.
Yeah.
And
right.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just like we really don't have a good model for how to do relationship and child rearing.
Right.
Because
right.
there are these real adult human needs to explore. And so then it becomes, well, you cheated on me, or, you know, or am I going to tell the truth about what I need and destroy you emotionally, or am I going to hide it? Or, you know, it's like just the whole... That whole gamut is so ridiculous
yeah.
to me that
well,
we don't
like,
have,
yeah.
Yeah. we don't have
well,
a
it's
container.
Like, it's like the Saturn solar model.
Mm.
You know, like Saturn, but also solar. Like, you know, like the Saturn idea of like structure, the shoulds,
mm.
the you know the limits of expression, the like discipline and structure and sacrifice and that whole model. But then it's also solar. Because it's like there's a principle that everybody orbits if they're doing
mm-hmm.
it, you know. So anyways, like just thinking like on the side of that. But when Lilith does relationship, Lilith is very committed. But when Lilith is healthy, she got herself into a dynamic where she could fully express herself in the various ways that may mean.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're having a Lilith relationship, we may be together for 3 days and apart for a week. Maybe together
mm-hmm.
for a month and apart for a month.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like what does each person need? And also when Lilith is healthy, when you decide that you really want something and the other person doesn't want it right mm-hmm. now but might in 3 or 4 days, then you gracefully accept it. You're not bent out of shape because you're not trying to orbit a principle and you're not trying to cling to a rule.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we don't have a good model. We have a good model if we're robots. And if
mm-hmm.
we're submissive, but we're not. We're at the beginning of the Aquarian age, and you know these Pluto-Uranus squares are shaking everything up. And so,
yeah,
if you have something in the sign, you know, up to like 20 degrees of Cancer, for example, you know,
yeah.
that might want nesting and safety. You know, it's
yeah. Yeah.
getting
yeah.
hit at some point
yeah.
in these 3 years. If you have anything in Libra, it's getting hit. If you have anything in Capricorn and Aries, so.
Yeah.
All the structures and the ways that one does things. So, yeah, we don't have a good model. I mean, there are tons of teachers who are coming out with all kinds of interesting, you know, things, spiritual teachers, relationship, you know, teachings and stuff about sexuality and how to reinvent relationships. And there's a lot of stuff out there, and some of it's really great. And, yeah, but are we willing to release ourselves from the hold of that history? I mean,
mm-hmm.
this is one of the reasons why I emphasize how important it is to get to know Lilith. And I think why the sales of the book are so good, because people are like craving to know this thing and know that it's not evil, because it is a remedy, instinct, and
mm-hmm.
trusting your body. I mean, just trusting the information that comes, the guidance that comes from within your own body. Like how you know, to our modern, postmodern minds, like how radical that is.
Yeah.
But this is our animal roots.
Yeah.
So if we think of ourselves as animals, what's a good way to have relationships? Well, on one level, you have an urge to, you know, copulate when the chemicals are lining up in the right way, and if there's somebody in your field that smells right.
Right.
Like that's like one element of a relationship. Well then. How do I deal with the emotional bonding? Well, with Lilith is very committed. Lilith is very loyal, but perhaps not monogamous.
Yeah.
Perhaps
yeah.
Lilith is monogamous. You know, perhaps there's a dynamic in play that create, you know, that opens the door to a happy acceptance by Lilith of monogamy, but perhaps not, and perhaps not all the time. I was reading this book last year. I can't remember what it's called, and I think I loaned it to somebody, so I don't even have it in my office. But it was about polyamory. I know you and I were talking about that because I was telling you about like some of the research I was doing and what I was experiencing, and just this idea of like being open to loving more than one person. You know, we mm-hmm. talked about that several times, and one of the things that was now I'm remembering a bunch of conversations, so I'm getting distracted. But hold on one second. Oh, one of the models that was presented in this book to kind of this author was interviewing people who have different lifestyles and different ways of navigating this. And to have like this, you know, one of them was to have this partnership, but then one or both people, depending on how they worked it out, would have freedom to explore brief relationships outside of this relationship, like other relationships. Whether or not they talked about it, you know, the guideline was set up and it was, you know, they agreed mutually and everything was great, you know, how they did it. But it worked different ways, but there was that option to do this. And that is very Lilith, because who knows what you're going to be like sexually next year?
Yeah.
Like who knows what's going to happen to me this summer regarding, you know, my whole hormonal deal. We don't know what's going to happen. So we, you know, I don't know how they, I mean, like, you know, just speaking like really generically, my partner and I live in Tucson, and the heat affects us very, very differently, just like as a generic example. When summer comes around, I become agitated because I get pissed off that I live in Satan's oven. Like, I get like agitated because it's so hot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my partner doesn't get agitated. She might not be as physically active in general because it's just too hot to do so. She might rest more. Like, so we have this different response to seasons is what I'm getting at, you know, these extremities of weather. So who knows what's going to happen? And, you know, the other thing that happens in some relationships is that one person goes through an experience that, you know, some kind of transformative thing that he or she needs to do, and maybe is not available to the other person. And, like, so what does that mean? That they kind of stop having a relationship, but they're still having one? So this idea of, like, Lilith informing relationships is like, well, what do you need? You find out what you need. I'll work on what I need, like the awareness. And then let's see what kind of mutual ground we can create. It's very egalitarian, but recognizing that nobody is the same. So
yeah. Yeah, and the combination of when two people come together throws a whole other energy dynamic in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wish we live in a world where it was easier to flow from, you know, or where it was more like... things were easier to change as you went along. It's like, yeah, this is good. It's working for me now, but you know, now I want to try something else. What about that?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, that's what we have to create as individuals, and that's part of the Aquarian Age thing, because the structures don't work. That, you know, it's not set up such that, you know, you can be a unique individual and thrive within structure, because the structures, at this point, you know, many of them don't support any of it. So we have to create it for ourselves. And like, I'm kind of like, you know, trying not to pick on you for saying I wish we could, you know, I wish
right,
we lived in a world
sure,
thing.
Yeah,
I'm trying
sure,
not to like
yeah.
pick on you about that, but like we're all in that position. So it's like, okay, so you can change how that works for you. And that is activating Lilith too. It's like this, you know, the confidence and the knowing that it's okay to be self-interested.
Right.
And actually, we will talk about that with you when we get into your chart, because you have it in the first house.
Yeah.
So that kind of idea of self-interested action and unique, you know, the individuality and you know, really finding out who you are, what you need, what you offer, how that flow happens, and, you know, how those different flows fluctuate and change and interact. Like, it's, you know, it's really loud for you because it's in the first house. It is in Taurus and retrograde, but it is, you know, it is in the first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a life lesson.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so, you know, to some degree, a lot of us have tried to be good patriarchal people. And, I mean, you're not, I mean, yeah. just from what I know about you, you're not, like, swallowing, you know, lock, stock, and barrel all the patriarchal crap.
No.
But some of that, yeah, I know you're not. And but some of that structural stuff that seems weighty
yeah.
does seem to, you know, does seem to
yeah.
affect you, as you as
yeah.
you've indicated. Yeah. You know.
Sure.
Well, so were there other planets or other archetypes you were thinking might be similar
well,
to Lilith, or would you like? Yeah.
It might help to look at my chart. I don't know when.
Great.
When is a good time to do that.
Oh, that's a great time, yeah, because there's been a
okay.
lot of, we've been done a lot of, like, laying this stuff out. So,
yeah.
I wanted to get into the themes really deeply, and then, yeah, let's get your chart. I had it in front of me the whole time, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what degree, Taurus?
20.
Okay. So toward the end of the first house.
Yeah. Do you, you want me to send you the chart I'm using?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, let me just do that right now.
Okay.
Oops, hold on. Okay. Yeah, because I've already plugged that in, so I'll email that right now. Okay, so that's sent. That should be there in a second. It does have transits and progressions on there, too, just mm-hmm. for reference, just in case.
Okay.
Which is actually pertinent, because at some point I'll talk about Saturn, now it's stationing in opposition, or close to stationing. You know, it's 2 degrees away from opposing the Lilith. So it's kind of an interesting time for you to, you know, have these conversations with me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like Saturn and Scorpio, you know,
right.
digging under the surface of like what this is, you know, what this may be
yeah.
about for you. Yeah.
For sure. Yep.
Yeah.
You know, it's very personal.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought I opened it, but now I can't.
Okay.
Give me a minute.
Also in this chart, you'll notice the asteroid Lilith, and yours is at 18 Sagittarius in the 8th house.
Okay.
Lilith. Yeah, so we can talk about that some too. I mentioned the last time we talked about some kind of thematic elements like activism and, you know, underdog
mm-hmm.
fighting for and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But so the true black moon is OSD period capital L, and it's in the left mm-hmm. in the first.
Okay.
And then the asteroids in the eighth.
The program that opened the chart made it look too small, so I'm trying to another program. It's going to take me a minute, but...
Okay.
I'm okay. following you.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so, why don't I just jump into what it means in the first house?
Cool.
Okay. So all these themes are loud. That's kind of what it means. Like or at least some corner of at least one of these themes is super, super loud. So, you know, I mentioned those three major you know, aspects of Lilith stuff, like categories of life experience, like health, wellness, you know, and then food, nutrition, and then also sexuality. Well, also all experiences, you know, relating to the body and presenting the body. So then also personality and style will be part of that because we're talking about the first house.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in Taurus, but you have this Aries rising. And so, you know, this Aries fire ascendant, you know, while Lilith is in Taurus, this earth slowing down kind of thing, it does kind of, you know, it kind of makes some noise. It will want to make some noise because the Aries rising supports having Lilith in the first. There's like a simpatico kind of thing with the fiery energy.
Mm.
So Lilith in the first... Something about these themes is very, very important. And also, you carry the energy of Lilith, whether you like it or not, and whether you know it or not, just like with any first house placement. You know, typically with the first house planet will point will show up with this energy, and we sometimes don't even know that we do it until somebody says, "Hey, you're kind of like that, aren't you?" And we're like, "Oh yeah, I guess, you know, I guess I am." And in this case, it's like, you know, being different when it comes to food, relationships, you know, autonomy, sexuality, like being different or being non-status quo is what I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
Something
yeah.
other than the accepted status quo. Because Lilith is really anti-Saturn. Like, really comes down to it. Everything Saturnian doesn't work.
Uh-huh.
You know? So also in the first house, because you carry this sense of needing to be against the grain in order to be authentic and autonomous, and other people, of course, will sense that, even if they know nothing about this archetype.
Hmm.
And let's say that on paper you look like everybody else, but they will sense, or thinking about instinct, they will smell something's different about you.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of the, it's certain times in your life, you may find that all of the cultural garbage, like piles of, you know, cultural karmic crap from patriarchal treatments of the feminine, trying to control the feminine or trying to regiment it or get it to be predictable and consistent so that it's not feminine anymore, like it's not this energy of unfolding and being, but trying to make it be the masculine idea of it, which is, you know, like Eve versus Lilith, you may actually at certain times in life be blamed without even understanding why. You'll be labeled the problem because you're disruptive.
Right.
And what's happening is, you know what I'm saying? Have you
yeah.
experienced that?
I okay. totally know what you mean, yeah.
Okay. and even if they don't know anything about what we're talking about, they're sensing there's something dangerous about you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think this is true, but you could just keep your mouth shut for 100 years of life, never open your mouth, never make a self-interested decision, never go against the status quo, but people would sense there's something about you that's probably
yeah.
dangerous. Yeah. Yeah. So you don't even have to do anything with Lilith. You will be seen as a Lilith figure, which in many circles is viewed as disruptive.
Mm.
So it's good, ultimately, when we look at it from one angle, it's great to be disruptive because status quos always get stale.
Yeah. But it's an internal
yeah.
it's an internal struggle because there's a part of me that, there's the Libra South Node and the prominent Saturn Capricorn Sun and just like the holding back experience, you know, the like,
yeah.
can't push their buttons, I can't, you know, I can't say that or they won't like me. And
mm-hmm.
I had an experience recently where I had the experience of doing a pattern that I've seen throughout my life where all of a sudden I say something that nobody expects me to say and they're like, wait a minute, you know, you weren't supposed to be that kind of person. And
right.
and it's like this time I was like, you know what? I didn't do anything wrong there. That was just
right.
me being me, and I wasn't hiding it ever. And if you were choosing not to see that, that's like your issue. And so, but that's how I see that. I see it as people being like, wait a minute, you were supposed to be this way, and you're not.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you present, hey, look, I'm a Capricorn. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
And I'm nice and I'm cooperative and I like to get along with people. Like that
yeah.
whole that Libra South thing. Yeah. And then
yeah.
so when you do that, yeah, you see that reaction and it's like, well, the unexpected
yeah.
is like the natural wild. It's the unexpected and what you can't predict and can't control. Like, you know, like this is something that if you do this long enough, if you live this way long enough, if you get a reputation for being that person, you may, like I get this, I think of sometimes of this parallel between how we talk about the weather and how we talk about certain people who are disruptive in a Lilith way.
Hmm.
Because we talk about the weather and we're like, Tropical Storm Cindy pummeled South Carolina today. You know, it's kind mm-hmm. of like adding in these images of
right.
like violence.
Right.
right?
Yeah.
And it's like Mother Nature is doling out her worst for the Midwest. It's so cold and terrible and everyone's sick. You know, all these like terrible things we talk about the weather. Well, the weather just does what it does. Like the weather is kind of like an instinctive, we could think of it as an instinctive extension of the, you know, what it's like to be on this planet. Like things change. Weather happens. Like, you know, trees fall on houses. Like things, you know, things happen.
Yeah.
But we vilify it. So it's like people can become, like, get these, like, reputations like terrible storms when they're when they're really Lilith people. So the more gracious we are and the more forgiving we are that people are afraid of what they don't expect. And people, you know, we really just want to be safe. And Lilith people don't make us feel safe because there is a changeable energy. It's a changeable energy. And so if you do that enough, you know, people will react to you like, you know, like, like tropical storm Marina. It's like, it's like, whoa, you know, like they flinch when they see you, but it's like, it's their problem. It's like you were, like you said, it's like they've been trained. And I go into this really in depth in the Lilith book of like, you know, this whole thing about forgiveness and acceptance, because most of us have been trained even subconsciously to be afraid of things that change.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and Lilith is constantly trying to find the right avenue, and the energy changes and emotions fluctuate. And so people who carry that Lilith energy, it's like, I don't know. I don't know if I trust her. You know, I just don't know if I can trust. And so the Lilith person has to respond to that with kind of like benign amusement and like gracious compassion and, but when you're aligned with, you know, be corny here, but when you're aligned with your truth, right, when you're speaking something true and you're vibrating, I trust myself, the energy actually inspires people. And then people are like, hey, how do you do that thing? Why do you do that way? Can you tell me the thought process? And, you know, because people want to be able to trust themselves. This is the opposite side of the coin.
Yeah.
We crave Lilith, and you know we crave Lilith. Like I think in Tucson, I definitely know a lot of people who become Lilith people have become Lilith people through one way or another. And I know that you living in Eugene, like I know you would know a lot of them too. And so people get there, but it's just kind of like not the norm. You know, it's not the norm, and
Yeah, and it doesn't feel safe to be a Lilith person, and which now I have language for, thank you.
You're welcome.
Feel, you know, you want that stability. Like I know, I mean, at least I feel like I want I want that stability of knowing people are going to be there. And I guess maybe what I need to learn is more how to trust that I'm safe. And they can make their own choices about whether they're going to hang with that or not.
Yeah. And this is where, you know, part of that, you know, lower chakra energy of like first and second chakra, that first chakra would be the domain of safety, security. Do I belong here or do I belong somewhere? Am I safe? You know, am I rooted? Can I nest? You know, that kind of thing. Is my foundation solid? You know, my emotional and life foundation. But then the second chakra is that whole reflection from other people energy. So it's like if you as a Lilith person decide that you're safe, and if you decide that when you encounter the funny looks or the gasps or the confusion, if you make a commitment to be compassionate and just do what you need to do, and let other people make their own choices. I mean, people will throw fear at you sometimes, and one has to just be accepting of it. You know, one has to, because if you're going to be a Lilith person, the only way to be sane about it, or to stay sane through the process, is to make sure you're not absorbing what other people reflect to you. Because if I say, you know, oh, well, I have I eat raw meat, or I have non-traditional relationships, or whatever it is, right, kind of Lilith thing that's out of the norm, whatever that is, if I say that to somebody, that person's uncomfortable, I have the right to decide, as you know, that it's not about me.
Mm-hmm.
So that sense of groundedness and comfort and being in your body, listening to instincts, knowing that the decisions you're making are, in fact, if they are aligned with this animal and, you know, intellectual person you know you are, but if the intellect is aligned with the animal and the choices are aligned with that instinct, then it's like you can observe the world as full of people who are trained to be afraid to be instinctive. And that's all it means. And then you might say, oh, I eat raw meat. And somebody goes, oh, like, that's the grossest thing ever. I can't eat a little. And they won't stop. And you can just let it go because it's not about you. It's not for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you made that decision because your body said, that feels really good. The same way with alternative health care, the same way with alternative sexuality, non-traditional relationships, whatever the category mm-hmm. is. It's like, mm-hmm. okay, so that makes you uncomfortable. Because yeah. you're really in your lower chakras and you know who you are and you're not afraid. You know, we have to go through a process to really, you know, firm this up, but we become unafraid of what's out there because we know that we can survive it.
Yeah.
So that's the process. So it turns out that if you know it's safe and you're compassionate yeah. and you're grounded, then it becomes safe. And it is
yeah.
safe. I mean, like I say, I'm a Lilith figure, and I talk about this stuff, and everything I do, Moon, Mercury, Neptune, it's very erratic.
Mm-hmm.
And I was afraid of using that energy, and I explored using it, and it turns out that because I believe in it, I don't attract people who want to make me wrong for doing it. And that's kind of the magic, because I don't fear it. So I don't draw it.
Yeah. I think I'm getting there.
it takes some faith, you know, as you can imagine, because you just have to decide. Again, you know, as we talk about with all the channeling stuff I do, Judy's always telling people to just decide you're safe already. Just decide
mm-hmm,
you're safe.
Right.
But what I tell people who ask me Lilith questions, you know, in readings, and they feel vulnerable because I'm not, you know, they're not sure if they can do it or if they can say no to this or if they can pursue their interest or whatever it is. You know, they're mm-hmm. not sure if the context they're in will support it. And and I say to them, well, the more that you can look at other people's fearful reactions as indicative of the fact they've been trained to be fearful, you know, just, but it's not about you,
mm-hmm.
the more than you can let go of the expectation of
yeah.
being made wrong for being yourself.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think I'm starting to create experiences where I have more of that, like, wow, that really wasn't about me. That just
right.
really was not about me. And I just was being me, and that is really clear. I've got the Saturn opposing.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about first house. What about Taurus?
Oh, yeah, so Taurus. So, you know, Taurus being an earth sign, and there is a sense of visceral earthiness, right? So it kind of
mm-hmm.
Makes the sense of smell even mm-hmm. more important to listen to, that subtle sense of smell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that whether it's about literal odors or that sense of that we assume is smell, which kind of is, that kind of hormonal sense, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Taurus is also about slowing down to make sure that things are in order, and it's also about the essentials.
Mm.
So when your Lilith is online, you will be very specific and non-chaotic, right, calm and possessed about where your energies go. Now, that is in conflict to an Aries rising, which is like, let's go.
Mm.
And a Taurus Lilith is like, let me be extremely clear before I take my first step. Let me check in.
Mm.
And then there's this pause that's focused.
Mm.
And then I'm going to do my thing. And it's like you do it once.
Mm.
Like you do it once because you felt into it. That would take some time probably to develop that trust, but that's what looks like when it's online. It's the essentials.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple, you know, simplistic even. Simple, simplistic, simplified. and no frills, and just kind of like real, very real and right there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a Lilith and Taurus energy. So in the first, you know, again, personality, style, how outgoing you are or are not, you know, all those things through that, you know, with Aries rising, but with that through also including a layer or a filter of the Lilith and Taurus of just being very, it's like being very intentional about those choices.
Mm.
I see it in you. I mean, I see, like, sometimes I see, like, the Libra South Node deliberation. Sometimes I see the Capricorn kind of, like, strategy running scenarios, like, what would it be like if this happened, you know. But sometimes I do see this thing where there, I say something, it affects you, you pause, you process, and then you respond. Like, I definitely see that within, you know, as I'm describing it. Yeah.
Interesting.
The other thing is because you become so intentional and things become so streamlined and you don't, how do you say this, you might not be given to, you know, chaos or whatever, like a lot of erratic stuff because you get very intentional about how that instinct functions and how it advises you. Other people will see you as stubborn because you're very clear about the direction. Yeah, so that's another thing about it. And if people want to do something with you or you want to do something with them, they might naturally assume at first that you'll do it the way they want with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I use this example all the time. It's really stupid, but it's real. You have a friend who always wants to go see movies where, you know, everybody's crying all the time, all these tear-jerking movies, and you're like, yeah, I don't want to see that. And you have another friend who's like, I could really go see this movie where things blow up. And you're like, yeah, I don't want to see that. Well, someday you want to go see a movie and you're like, I have these two friends. I can't call either of them because they're, you know, because they, and so it's like, you know, you may seem stubborn after a point, but it's like being very intentional. And that is the Taurus thing. It gets a bad rap for being stubborn, but sometimes it's just being really clear, focused, intentional, and simple.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes it does resist change, but not always. You know, not always.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I have a second house son, so I've learned about this the last 10 years or so, 11 years, and my perspective on it's really changed a lot because I noticed that as I look stubborn to other people, I'm just very clear about my priorities.
The label that comes to mind that people give me is like, unreasonable. You're being completely unreasonable. You're being irrational. You're being like, yeah, I mean, that's really the sort of the core. And I think the unreasonableness, there's such a part of me that is so reasonable.
Yeah.
That I can't even imagine that somebody's sitting there saying that to me. And
right.
Yeah. So
Next time it happens, check in if it's that thing that's happening under the surface that they are, quote, smelling, unquote. Like, check in to see, you know, that you're difficult because of whatever. Like, it could just be that, like, they don't understand why you made the choice you made. This is a very common thing, by the way, with Taurus, like Lilith and Taurus, for example, because they don't understand. Like, you've streamlined a process of knowing what's right for you, and they don't understand it, so you're difficult.
Uh-huh.
It's like, you know, it's just how it is. And the other thing is unreasonable and irrational. These are classic, you know, I'm not like to get to like conspiracy theory or whatever, but these are classic patriarchal labels for what's wrong with women.
Yeah, right.
You're being unreasonable. Isn't that just like a woman? You know how women are.
Yeah.
So it's like if somebody tells you that, yeah, okay, great. Lilith is real. Okay, good. You know, like,
proud of it.
Yeah, because they might not have their own, you know, sense of making those self-interested decisions in that way in place. They might not have a sense of knowing what's best for them. Their brains might be doing it.
Yeah.
And it also might be that what's right for them simply doesn't happen to be what's right for you, but they can't put themselves in your shoes or give you the benefit of the doubt that you're just doing it differently. Because a lot of us have that. When we don't understand it, we say, oh, that person's just being unreasonable. We do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
because we fail to have the imagination to, you know, do something different. You know, it's like a
right.
lack of, or not willing to let other people be as real as we are or something.
Ridiculous. You're being ridiculous. Stop it.
Yeah, if you could see what's happening, this is the choice you would make. Well,
yeah.
No, because that's the choice you would make, because that's how you see it.
Yeah.
You know, that's
right.
being unreasonable.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
Well, so the Saturn opposing the Saturn transit, and I think we should, like, we can do this for the rest of today, and I think if you want to pick it up the next time, I think it's really worth exploring, because it will, there's a lot to mine, you know, from this transit just by itself, especially stationing
mm-hmm.
an opposition to it. But the Saturn opposition will be, you know, some kind of reality check about how you do and don't do that Lilith.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And saying, like here I am, a Scorpio, you know, in your seventh house, I'm pointing out to you all these aspects about Lilith, and you are getting a view on yourself, some of the things you know very well, and some of the things you maybe know but haven't put words to, some of the other things you do and you're fine with, and some of the other things you're like, really? And it's like you're getting this opposition, you know, from Saturn. Now, here I am, like, you know, kind of teaching this class, right? You're like the student, you know,
yeah.
like, in, you know, sharing this information with you, like being Saturn. So you're getting information that is essentially a reality check about where you are in this process, and that, you know, that's a confrontation, because I'm, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I do know you personally, but I'm, you know, leaving most of that out and just trying to be very broad, you know,
yeah.
as we do this, and we leave that out. But, like, you know, when Saturn opposes something and you get information, it may can leave someone feeling vulnerable, because you might feel a little laid bare.
Mm.
So if it works right, if the transit's working well, you're going to feel really vulnerable about the ways that your Lilith doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to perhaps have tools to see how to constructively, you know, put things in place for yourself. You know,
mm-hmm.
not what I'm telling you to do, but given the information you're learning and the perspectives that are coming into focus, you know, again, those things that you know about yourself or things that haven't put words to but kind of sense and all that stuff, you know, and then to do something about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, through structure or something. And this is in the seventh house. So a lot of the reflections that you get through this thought process will be about how you interact with others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the light of Saturn, this confrontation, or this, like, hey, I would like to tell you something about Saturn thing. That's not me. Like, I'd like to tell you something about yourself so you can see better how others see you. And then, Marina, what you'll do is, as you process some of this stuff, you'll be like, oh, yeah, that interaction or that relationship, oh, yeah, it's formed because I don't speak up enough, or because I say this and they don't understand and they call me unreasonable, or whatever
mm-hmm.
it is, like that,
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
you see the cycle of, you know, I am versus I see how you see me, that whole first
mm-hmm.
house, seventh house thing. Yeah. Yeah. This is
yeah.
where I see the trend starting, yeah.
Yeah, it is. It becomes hard to sort out, or at least that's how I've been experiencing it, is that it's hard to sort out where I end and what's real and what is just something somebody's telling me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, and related to that, you know, part of this will be observing in what dynamics, whether they're generic dynamics that arise from time to time here or there, or set things in established relationships, like patterns that arise with particular people, do you feel controlled?
Mm-hmm.
that
feels really,
because
you
can swallow what somebody says or you can reject it, but that's a different question. I mean, that's important.
Yeah.
And then the extension of that is, do I feel like, and it's Saturn in Scorpio, do I feel perhaps even manipulated? And then natally, because we should go into this, that, you know, Lilith is, we should talk about the aspects next time too. Like Lilith is trying, you know, Pluto, it's square Mars and Moon, and it's opposing the Neptune.
Yeah, it's a hot
so that,
part of my chart.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It is. Yep. So the stuff with the Saturn transit, you know, it means obviously that Saturn is stationing about 2 degrees away from the Neptune. Of course, that's important in its own right.
Mm-hmm.
But activating that opposition, you know, yields more more information as well, and how that Lilith fits in. So I shouldn't have talked about that Saturn transit actually before the aspects, but I guess we can forgive me, perhaps.
Yeah, I'll forgive you.
Okay, thank you.